I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales podcast. Thanks for joining me again on the show. Bradley Croker this week. We all know Brad from the Road to Berlin podcast series. There's been two podcasts on Brad before as well, so not going to talk too much about Brad and who he is because I think you know so much about him if you've listened to those past episodes. But if you haven't, he's a 2:24 marathon guy. He DNF'd at Berlin after getting injured. And we just caught up for a bit of a chat just to keep the listeners informed about what Brad's up to. Really similar to what I did with Julian last week, actually. I guess when you talk to these guys once a week for 12 weeks, that when they disappear from your life a bit and you don't hear from them that much, it's a bit weird. So it was good to kind of get the boys back on and just to have another chat and just hear what they're up to in their lives. I hope you enjoy it. It was really unscripted. Most of my interviews, I don't really script much of the conversation, but this one I just sat down and put on Skype and just had a chat to Brad, and that's just what I'm sharing you with today. So I hope you enjoy it. I want to probably do a bit more of that kind of stuff, just go in, with kind of no intentions and just see where it goes. So it's always easy talking running with Brad. He's pretty well spoken, and hope you get a bit out of this one. Big news coming November 1st. Keep your eyes out for a bit of a project that us three boys are going to be involved in. Something pretty exciting. Can't give much away now, but keep in the loop for November 1st. Social media, you are anywhere on social media and you should see what's going on. Exciting times. Thanks, guys. Bye. Rightio, Brad Croker's back in the country and back on Tell Me Your Tales. Welcome back, Brad.
Thanks, Bray. It's good to be home. It's as fun as it is travelling, there's certainly no place like home.
You were gone for ages. What, 6 weeks?
Five, I think. But it felt like 10.
Yeah, right. Because it felt like, I think, we pretty much left a day apart. And feels like I've been back for ages and you've just really got back the last few days.
Yeah, I think in hindsight, it was probably just a little bit too long. Like, I was well and truly ready to come home probably in the last week and a half.
So, yeah. Spain for the rest of the time after, because you had a month in Spain, didn't you?
Three weeks. Yeah, 3 weeks. So we had 3 days down in Munich straight after Berlin. So we caught the bus down the day after. And then, 3 days there, which was quite interesting. Bumped into Moner at Oktoberfest, and he was limping around the festival because he was pretty banged up from the marathon in Berlin. There for 3 days, and then we flew from there to Madrid, spent 3 weeks mostly driving. We hired a car and drove around, so it was good. But I'm the type of person that when I'm on holidays, I like to have a purpose. And I was saying to my wife Viv that, you know, one of my enjoyable holidays was, trekking to Everest base camp, because every day I got up when there was a purpose, to get to base camp. Whereas when you're just sort of wandering around, Spanish, you know, towns. As fun as it is, it sort of wears a bit thin after a few weeks. So I was well and truly looking forward to getting home.
Yeah, and out of the routine thing as well, to that kind of, you a kind of routine guy?
Yeah, I'm very much so a routine guy and very much a homebody as well. And so just trying to find places to run, and you know, I still like eating well while I'm away, which is often hard.
What about cake of the day? You weren't eating well.
Oh yeah, but that was eating cake of the day is fine. And I know Julian gave me a bit of crap about looking fat, you know, while I was away, but I actually weighed in less than when I left.
Yeah, right.
So we actually cooked a lot of our meals rather than eating out all the time, because in Spain it's all just tapas, which is all just sort of finger food type stuff. So it's I wouldn't want to eat that every day.
Yeah. And I guess the flip side, you know, you weren't there recovering from a marathon, you were kind of building back up.
Exactly. Like, I guess in my head when we booked the holiday, it would have been run Berlin and then let myself go for 2 weeks. And I didn't feel like I'd really deserve to let myself go, because I'd had 6 weeks off before Berlin. So the fact that I was pain-free, I wanted to sort of get back out running. And I still wanted a little bit of structure in my training, because I just get sick of just jogging every day. And for me, every jog then just turns into like a semi-tempo, which is probably worse than having some sort of structure to my week.
Yeah, because you get in that grey area, don't you, where you're just like kicking down your long run, or not your long runs, just like you might plan to go out for an hour easy and then you're rolling 3:40s for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And a few of my long runs I did get rolling, but I think when you're not placing as much emphasis on the other sessions, it's okay to do that. It sort of makes you a little bit stronger. But the running over there was really hard just compared to the trails that we have back home. Often just running on these uneven paths in sort of touristy areas, it's not ideal. And I'm the type of person that just sort of likes being out in the bush by myself. So to have all these people around made it hard. And just the little one percenters that you can't do while you're away. You know, like I went for close to 8 weeks without a massage, and you just feel like you're constantly on edge. You know, not eating as well. I'm making it to sound like it was a horrible holiday, but
just done 5 weeks overseas and just hating life.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that bad, but I like home, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess there's still a bit of that like frustration around not making the start line as well at Berlin.
Yeah, definitely. I guess now though, like it was hard over there, but once it's done and dusted, you sort of forget about it and move on and plan the next one.
Mm-hmm. Which so leads us to it, like have you been back on a structured program over there or
So I spoke to my coach, so I guess the plan was, because I had cortisone the day before I left, and then obviously flying over there couldn't run, tested it out in Prague and it was okay, and for that whole first week there was no pain, so I Skyped my coach when we were in Berlin, and he then wrote a bit of a program to sort of tie me over until we got back.
Yeah.
There was a bit of tempo, some 2 minute efforts. Volume wasn't massive. I think it was between 105 and 130K. So slowly building throughout the few weeks. Had a couple of solid long runs in there, and considering I'd missed 6 weeks, by the time I came home, I was actually moving pretty well, considering. Running in, you know, unfamiliar places, and I didn't have racing flats over there at all, so I was just doing all my sessions in normal trainers. So I think I did a 2x5K in Cadiz, and it was quite warm, it was well over 20 degrees, and I found this area in like the port, so it's on the water. So I think I ran 16, I would have averaged around 16:30, I think, for both the for the 5K reps off like a K float in sort of 4 minutes. So, you know, if I could do that off not a lot of training, I was pretty happy.
In heavies as well. I looked at a couple of your sessions and they were pretty impressive, especially that, because I tried the same one, the
1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You averaged like 3:12s for that. That was solid.
Yeah, and that was on an area where I'd looked on Strava and I saw that there was a part, like there was a dirt track that most people had been running on, and for my warm-up, I was able to cover about three quarters of where I was going to do the session. And I got to the second 3 minute, which is when it starts to get hurt, because the, the one and the two and the three on the way up aren't too bad. But then if you've gone a bit too hard, as you probably found out, you get halfway through that 4 minute up and you're like, whoa, I've still got like, I've got another 2 minutes of this, only a minute recovery, like, which is a float, and then 3 minutes. So when I was about 2 minutes into my last 3 minute effort, I hit this section that was just boggy and almost stopped the session because I was hurting as it was. And then I saw my pace drop from sort of sub 3:10s to like 3:15 in the space of 20 seconds. And I'm just like, but fought through and it ended up being a pretty good session.
That's another thing that does your head in overseas too, isn't it? Like finding those locations, and you spend half an hour on Strava just trying to find segments where people have been able to run fast on so you can go and try to get a decent session in.
Yeah, I think Bib was getting a bit frustrated the amount of time I was spending on Strava while we're away.
Just looking up these maps and seeing if you can get some course records and all those kind of things. But in the most important thing is you just want somewhere where you can open up a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And ideally, just not on the concrete all the time either.
So now, because I did read somewhere, and Julian, I spoke about how like you're looking forward to coming back and getting into some proper training, but that's pretty, like you were doing some solid stuff over there, some consistent weeks.
Yeah, I guess though when you're used to running sort of, and it's all perspective, you know, like back when I was a track runner, 135K a week was massive for me. But then you start training as a marathoner and your recovery weeks are sort of 140. When you're doing 135, you don't really feel like you're training well. And I think for me, it's more about, even though I'm running 135K a week and I'm still getting in good sessions, just that whole routine, I just feel out of routine and just not doing as many one percenters that, so I don't feel like I'm training properly. And, you know, just not eating as well. And, you know, when you're traveling a lot as well, your body just gets a bit tight, like just sitting in cars and it's just not, walking around streets carrying bags and it's just different to being home where you're purely focused on basically work and training.
Well, the cobblestones bang you up a bit as well, I reckon. Like you just never even have just walking, like just like your hips feel different and you're like upper body and it tests you out a bit. But do you think you can read a bit too much into all those little one percenters? Like do you become a bit of a, and I know you've spoken about it in the past, like you love ticking absolute every box. So then when one box isn't ticked, it kind of makes you feel like you're not training that hard. Whereas from someone else looking in, it looks like you're ticking the boxes pretty well.
Oh, exactly. Like I'm super anal when it comes to, you know, a bit of a perfectionist, I guess, which in some regards is good, but then other times it actually brings you undone. Times I'm just way too intense. And I think I'm slowly getting better. And I think that's a lot to do with Ben, my coach, because he's starting to, I guess, make me realize that you can't be up all year round. Like there's a time where you just need to chill out and just, you know, tick the legs over, get through training, but just not read into things too much. And I guess what he's sort of done now, he's actually setting some sessions that I've never done before. So I've got nothing to compare it to, and probably less structure, especially, I guess, being this far out from BWA. There's no point me doing sessions that I can get a real, you know, good reading on because I'm just going to probably cook myself being, you know, as intense as I am.
Yeah. So the plan with Ben's to move forward, and what are you going to do before kind of New Year's? We just start the marathon build early.
Yeah, well, this week, I'm not sure if I've mentioned it on a previous podcast, but I quit my job before I headed overseas and managed to secure a job teaching for next year, which I haven't taught for 10 years. So that's going to take a lot of adjustment. But the school that I'm teaching at next year offered me a sort of part-time position for the last 6 weeks of term. So I arrived in the country on Sunday and started there on Tuesday. So I've got a couple of year 8 PE classes and it's a bit of a different, so this is obviously high school, bit different school in terms of they actually have like a mentoring program. So I'm giving, you're meant to have 15 students that you actually mentor and you sit down one-on-one a few times a term and just talk to them about life and things like that. So I've started there this week and it's been a massive adjustment just dealing with jet lag and just a completely new work situation and not really a familiar work situation because it's been 10 years. And a lot of things have changed in schools in 10 years. So it's been a pretty rough week, which my focus for training, which is like, for example, yesterday, Ben set this session where it was basically just run for close to 90 minutes over some hilly terrain and just surge the hills. And I've never done a session like that before. And like I was knackered yesterday afternoon and didn't really want to do it. But because I didn't have anything to compare it to, I didn't care. Like even if I got halfway through the session and had to pull the pin, it didn't matter. Whereas if I had like a monofartlek or something that I knew what I should be doing, I probably wouldn't have done the session. So there'll be a lot of that over the next few weeks to 2 months, just slowly building my mileage back up to, so I think I'm sort of 140 this week, 150 next week, and probably won't hit above 100 miles for about another month.
Yep.
And it's unlike Julian, because I know Julian's focusing more on the speed stuff. I'm actually going the other way and just trying to build some strength. So, you know, these sort of 90-minute hilly runs where you surge the hills, you know, some tempos that aren't too intense, focusing on the midweek long runs. So basically doing anywhere between 90 minutes and 2 hours on a Wednesday, and Sundays anywhere between 2 hours and 2.5 hours. So really the focus is on probably volume over the next 8 weeks, hills, and also want to try doing some doubles on a Sunday, just because I want to do that during the marathon prep, because I think just time on your feet is really important, which I think Berlin showed that with, you know, guys like Julian and Dave Crinity. You know, like look at Dave Crinity, you know, there's not a lot of intensity in his training all week, but, you know, there's a lot of volume. So, and I guess, you know, I've come from a speed background, so my weakness is definitely my strength. So try and work on that.
Yeah, well, it's almost flip side of Julian, isn't it? Like he knows that he probably can't get much stronger at this stage, but he can get a lot faster, whereas you're, you know, don't need to concentrate on that 1500 kind of 5K, 3K kind of speed and need to get the strength down pat.
Yeah, and I guess where I got encouragement in the lead into Berlin was some of my speed sessions were actually better as a result of focusing on the longer stuff. So I found increasing my Wednesdays, doing some of those longer tempos and obviously longer Sundays meant that sessions like monofartlek, like I ran a monofartlek in my Berlin prep, and, you know, so I was running faster then than what I was doing when I was actually doing speed work. Mm. So I think for me, doing the strength work actually helps my speed in a way. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense, but but I guess it showed that in Berlin, or in the prep for Berlin.
Yeah, we looked at my training as well. Like it's a similar thing, how you can run quite fast off not doing a lot of speed work, and that obviously that strength component is so important, but then you need that kind of extra bit of strength to be able to survive those last kind of 7 or 8 Ks of the marathon, which those other guys have that, yeah, I don't think, well, I don't because I faded, but yeah, I think you'd be more in my boat than their boat.
Exactly. And I think, like, as long as, so when I say I won't focus on any speed work, I still do those 10-second hill sprints at the end of an easy run, and maybe one other time a week after an easy 35-minute run, I'll go and do, I don't know, 80 to 100 meter strides on like a synthetic oval. So I think that's enough just to actually keep that neuromuscular sort of turnover, even though you're not doing, you know, sort of lactic, you know, 1 minute efforts. I think that's enough to keep the speed there.
Yeah, just to have that general speed rather than the like speed in fatigued legs. When you're putting those floats in that kind of break you.
Yeah, exactly.
I liked your point about doing sessions that you haven't done before, and that was exactly why, because I woke up last Thursday and checked Strava and saw that session that you did, and I was like, well, if I do this, I've got nothing to compare it to. It doesn't matter if you run it well or poor or end up pulling out like I did.
Yeah.
But, it's a good kind of thing just to not put apples next to apples kind of thing and not have anything to get yourself down or anything to look at your watch halfway through and think you're so far behind what you usually would. So, it gets to your head.
Yeah, and I think yesterday surprised me as well. Like, because as I said, I wasn't feeling great, and I guarantee if I went out and did a mona, I don't think it would have been very good. Whereas yesterday, it did hurt. Like the session was pretty hard, but I was actually happy with, the result. But I guess I was happy with the result because I had nothing to compare it to. Like maybe in a month's time, when I don't have jet lag and I'm not teaching because we're on school holidays. Maybe I'll smash that session, but I guess as of yesterday, I was really happy with it. So, I've got another thing coming up in a couple of weeks where Ben's just said, run 5K in 16 minutes, but just throw in random surges. So don't have it minute on, minute off. Just run 16 minutes. Don't run it even, but just run, just throw in surges. So that's another sort of, I've never done that before either. So
yeah. So why this change from Ben? Like, has that been, have you guys sat down and reflected on the build-up, or did he read this from the way you were kind of over-analyzing the training, or how's it come about?
I think he's a pretty smart guy. I think he's obviously pretty good at reading me, knowing the type of person that I am. And I guess this is probably his way of holding me back so that we don't have a repeat of getting injured, like I did it for Berlin. So, I think it's a pretty smart move from him, because I'd be the type of person that I'd be like, all right, I'm back in the country, I've got 19 weeks till BWA, let's go.
Yeah.
And, in 6 weeks' time, I'll be cooked. And also, I think the other thing coming back into Australia this time of year is if I was to start doing the sessions that I was doing in the lead up to Berlin, I'd look at just the splits because that's the type of person I am, and it would be a lot harder to run those splits at this time of year because the weather's starting to get hot. So that's another reason why I think it's good just doing things where I don't have anything to compare it to. I've put the heart rate monitor back on, so that also has held me back. So the start of this week, I actually had two runs where I really just focused on keeping the heart rate under 135, and it probably meant that I ran 10 to 15 seconds a K slower than I would have if I just ran. So that's probably another thing that I'll try and apply this prep.
Yeah, well, we spoke about that over in Berlin, I think, about just using that heart rate to slow you down. And we also spoke in Berlin about how you and I both kind of get sucked in a bit too much with the splits rather than the effort. And it's probably why I don't like training for marathons in summer, because I try to do some of the sessions and they just look like they're going pear-shaped. And, yeah, you end up pulling the pin on them or not being satisfied with them, whereas the effort level's probably exactly the same as winter, but the pace is just so much slower.
Exactly. And I think I told you, I think when you're training in the heat, you just have to pretend that you're almost at altitude. Mm. Same sort of thing, Like those guys that live at altitude, they're not going to be doing their, marathon tempos at sort of marathon pace. They're going to be slower because they're at altitude, but it doesn't mean that they can't run, a good time in a marathon, even though the splits don't indicate that at altitude.
Yeah. Are you enjoying running with that heart rate monitor on just to, give you that extra bit of data and slowing you down?
Yeah, I do, actually, because it sort of takes it makes me feel good that, all right, the heart rate's telling me that I'm running at 135 and that's exactly the zone that I need to be in. I don't need to run any faster. Whereas when I don't have that, sometimes I think, maybe I'm not running hard enough. Mm. So to have that objective, indicator of how hard I'm running is good.
Well, in a way, it's almost opposite to trying to hit splits, because you can just go a tiny bit harder and hit that satisfied heart rate and just kind of leave it there. Whereas how many times is it really difficult to get the pace down and have to work super hard and get uncomfortable to, get down to 305s or 310s or whatever the session is you're doing. Whereas I'm the same. You just put on and go up when it gets to 135 or 140 or whatever the zone I'm in for the day. You just leave it there and chug along, look down every couple of minutes to make sure it's still there.
I'm hoping it sort of my sessions improve as a result, because as you know, a lot of my easy runs are close to 4 minute Ks, which based on the fact, when I've been wearing my heart rate this week, 415s to 420s is pretty much the heart rate zone that I should be in. So if I'm running 4 minute Ks, my heart rate's probably going to be 10 or 15 beats higher, which is starting to get into that gray zone. So hopefully by holding back a little bit more on those easy runs, one, my sessions will be better, but I'll also feel better doing the sessions and less chance of getting sick and injured.
Yeah, back up better. Had you ever worn them in the past when you were kind of banging out those long runs and stuff in 4 minute to see what you were blowing?
No, I used to wear heart rate quite a bit, but I guess when I was a bit younger, I wore the heart rate, but it was more just to see what it was actually doing rather than to control me. Whereas this time around, I'm actually going, all right, I don't want to go above 135 or, and it's, you know, I spoke to Ben about this as well, and it's not so much that don't go above it at all, because if I'm running on a really, really hilly course, like he doesn't expect me just to stop and walk up the hill so my heart rate doesn't go above 135, but it's just there to make sure that you're not, because I tend to escalate my runs and, you know, start off at 420s and be running sub fours by the end. So I think by having the heart rate there, it just stops that sort of escalation.
Yeah. Where are you getting those zones from? Have you worked them out scientifically, or are you just winging it, or what are you thinking?
Sort of winging it a little bit, and probably just basing it on, I guess, when was it? It was probably five years ago. I guess being here in Canberra, I was part of a few studies at the AIS. So I had all my heart rate zones then. So I'm sort of just keeping it similar, even though things may have changed a little bit. But for me, I know that if I'm up over 170, I'm working pretty hard, and I know that my easy runs should definitely be in the 130s.
Yeah, that's good. And what about races? You got any races on the books?
Not really. So I've got so this is week one of my 4-week block. So I'm still going to be following the same sort of cycle that I had. I've had for pretty much the last year, where I have like a moderate week, then a slightly lighter one, then an overload week, and then a recovery week. And at the end of the recovery week, I'll try and find some sort of race. And even if it'll probably just be park run, like for this first block, just to see where I'm actually at. And it'll be interesting to see what I run for park run, just doing, I guess, a little bit less intensity and, you know, just those sort of 90 minutes over rolling hills. Like I might surprise myself.
Yeah, well, you always bang out good park runs. You're always swift as.
Well, that's because I'm just intense and I just get up for them, which is just stupid. It's like it's a park run, but I don't know.
It's the complete opposite of what park run should be.
Yeah, it'd be the same. We'll put it this way, I'm probably more pumped up for park run than I was on the start line of Berlin.
Yeah, but you did have a phone and like some, your hat and all those kind of things. Like, you look like pretty sketchy at the start of Berlin.
Yeah, have you seen the footage of the race where they show the lead females after like 2 kilometres?
No, YouTube? I haven't watched anything yet.
Yeah, so if you YouTube it, and I guess within the first couple of kilometres, they show the lead female pack, and you can see me with my phone out videoing. It's pretty like.
I'll have a walk today. This is what I do on my day off, just watch running videos.
Yeah, like if I was at home watching it, I'd be like, who's that tool?
Yeah. Yeah, it's nearly 5 weeks away now. I'll go, wasn't it? It's bloody, that 5 weeks has gone pretty quick.
They have. So other than that, race-wise, not really sure. I guess there's not really a lot before Christmas. Like I looked at that Steigen, but it's hard for me because I looked at the date and it's the 23rd. So yeah,
Santa's like, coming 2 days after.
Yeah, so I've got to like try and get like, and flights at that time of year pretty expensive. And because obviously it'd be on at night, so you know I'd have to try and fly back to Canberra, you know, Christmas Eve, and then I'd have to drive down the coast. So yeah, not sure, but. Yeah, maybe I'd like to do something in the new year, and I reckon I might even do a couple of track races, just as good a 5K hit out. I know New South Wales 10K is off and on just before Biwa, and I've also like Sean Crichton, who I'm pretty good friends with here in Canberra. He's looking to break some of the over 50 5 and 10K track records, so I said that I'd. Pace him in, you know, some sessions and also some races between now and sort of Christmas. So that's another thing that'll, you know, sort of be good where there's no real pressure on training if I jump in and do some sessions with him.
Yeah, what's he got to run? What are the records?
I think 30. Well, I know the 5K is about 1540 high, I think.
Yeah.
So I guess he'll be hoping to run, you know, in the 1530s. And I think the 10K is maybe 32 something.
And he has to run on track, doesn't he? He wouldn't be able to do that on the road.
Yeah, no, on the track. So he he hasn't had a great start. He put spikes on for the first time in over a decade a couple of weeks ago and strained his hammy. Oh. So he missed a week, but he's back now. So yeah.
There's a lesson just in that though, isn't there? Like, do you really need spikes on at all if you're trying to run that pace?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess, like, yeah, so when
I'm not having to go at him. He's like the past Australian 10K record holder. But I just know I always jump in spikes way too early and just cooks my Achilles.
Yeah, I haven't had spikes on for three years, I guess. Yeah, 4 years. So, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe look at something in January, like maybe Cadbury half or, yeah. But I haven't really thought too far ahead other than just staying in one piece and building up my mileage and focusing on probably a few more hills, you know, between now and Christmas.
Yeah, that's good, the Cabby Half. Have you ever run that before?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of years. There's some rolling hills, but if you're fit, you can run it well. I remember running it off the back of Falls Creek 1 year and ran well, but I've been there unfit before, and if you're not fit, it just, it sucks a bit out of you trying to run well over those hills.
Yeah. Well, I think, the next 5 weeks is really about probably just adjusting to the new life that I'll be having next year. Because, as you know, as a school teacher, it can be pretty intense, and some days are pretty tough.
Yeah, it's so you're going to do full-time, aren't you?
I'm full-time next year, and, after a couple of days this week, I was starting to sort of question my career change. But I think it'll get easier because obviously this week's tough, just, trying to get over jet lag as well. And once you're a full-time member of staff, I think the kids treat you a little bit differently than sort of day one or day two when they've never seen you before.
Yeah, once you got the rapport and that relationship with the kids and you have them, the same time every week, it's a whole different story.
Yeah, exactly. And what was I going to say? I guess the good thing about the prep for BWAR is, 10 weeks out from BWAR is Christmas Eve. And I think I'll go back to school maybe four or five weeks out. So really I'll only have 2 more weeks of training and then taper. So I'll just really just have to survive those first 2 weeks of term, getting through my training, and then it should be pretty easy. And I guess most of that training will be done during school holidays. Mm. So I'll be able to train sort of full time.
You already thinking about Falls Creek or any altitude stuff?
I haven't at this stage. I could get up there. I think I said to Julian I'd be more inclined to go up sort of after the crowds have left. Mm. Just for two reasons. It's just so crowded up there, and I sort of like sometimes running by myself. But also I think for BWAR, the races start in March. So me being up there, unless I stay till the end of January, there's no real point me being up there in, going for 2 weeks over New Year's, because I reckon the altitude benefits will probably be gone by the time BWAR rolls around.
Yeah, like Josh did that last year and he was up there maybe for a month. Like he came back pretty late.
Yeah.
And it worked for him. But it works differently for everyone too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But even then, as I said, I go back to work 5 weeks before BWAR, and I think I read somewhere that altitude benefits can last for up to maybe 6. Yeah. So it'd be sort of, you'd be getting towards the back end of the benefits, by the time BWAR rolled around, considering I've got to go back to work. Whereas I think Josh would have been up there in February. Which I can't be up there in February. And if I was going to do it properly, that's how I'd want to do it.
Yeah, well, the people that only go out there for a week are really just going up for that group training effect more than altitude, aren't they?
You wouldn't get much benefit from a week.
Yeah, because I know Julian was just talking about going up for 5 nights or something like that, which is it's hardly worth driving up and back for.
Well, he just wants to go up and sell shoes and sign autographs, I reckon. Yeah.
He'll drive around in that van just trying to flog off stock that you can't get rid of in Ballarat.
Yeah, plug his new coaching business.
Yeah, Run Strong Coaching. Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't plug that last week when he was on here, actually. It's a surprise. He dropped it in there for 14 weeks leading into Berlin, but now he's made it official and didn't do it at all.
It's pretty good not having him on here, because I can say whatever he wants and he can't shut me down.
Yeah, well, I'm just waiting for a court case after he was on here last week, buddy. Defamation or something, questioning all these world records.
Yeah.
And I was feeling a bit better about recording with you today, not having to worry about what the guests said.
Yeah. So what are you thinking, BWA?
Yeah, I'm thinking BWA. Mind you, I should have booked those flights ages ago. They just keep going up and up. I don't think they're going to go down now. They're up to like $850 or something.
Still not too bad.
Yeah, it's much better than going to Europe. Yeah, so I'm thinking Steigen 10K.
Yeah.
I think I've got 7 weeks, kind of, got a whole month in November and then 3 weeks. So 7 weeks and, yeah, if I can run a good, I'd really like to go under 30. Like that's been I've run 30.05, 30.06, 30.11, 30.13. So, you know, bloody 15, 14 seconds off going over four times, which is, you know, nothing really, but it's just kind of played on my mind. And I was probably getting to a stage there where I wasn't sure when you move to the marathon if you can still get down to that pace. But the lead up to Berlin, I think when I ran that 30.45, like a bit of a 10K tempo a couple of weeks before, I thought if I was to run a 10K that day, it would have been, you know, maybe 30.20-ish. So
yeah.
I feel I can get down there if I can. And yeah, so just I'm kind of doing similar to Julian. I kind of started with the faster stuff. So straight on the track for some 400s last week, some 400s again today. But not in spikes and grassy kind of spongy track. And yeah, they've been happening. I'm still pretty unfit. Like I'm going to do a threshold on Saturday, just trying to get the heart at 160, 165 and just see what pace that equates to. And I reckon that will be, you know, 325s, 327s as a guess. So not aerobically that fit as yet, but feeling like the leg turnover's good. Did some good 1Kers on Tuesday night, which is good. Kind of averaged 301 and closed in 254. So feeling speedy, but just not fit yet. So that will slowly come back. And I'm the same, just being patient. And, you know, the long run the other day, I did an hour 45 and just kept that heart rate at kind of 135 to 140 and get home. And it was like 23K. And I'm like, whoa, that's like I wasn't even sure if it was a long run when you run 23K. You just got to check your ego at the door and just go, okay, this is what you're doing and just get it done. And I was just saying to Benny, who I was training with this morning, like, I've just got to worry about being 6 out of 10 fitness for 2 weeks. Mm. And then hopefully I become 7 out of 10 fitness, you know, in 4 weeks' time. And then, you know, when 7 weeks rolls around, it's a week before Steigen, if I'm at 9 or 10 out of 10 fitness, like, that's when I need to switch it on. I don't need to be feeling good now 7 weeks out.
And I think that's what I was getting to earlier in the conversation was, and I think you're a bit like me as well, whereas like if you're training, like if you're on and you want to be fit, and there's a time where you just let the fitness come and you really just go through the motions with training and you don't force it. And it's almost better to be easier rather than harder.
Yeah. And trying to concentrate on like finishing sessions strong. So those 1K reps the other day, like I was happy running the first couple in 305s, but I really wanted to finish close to 3 minutes rather than going into it going, I want to average 3 minutes or 301 like I did, and trying to run that in the first rep and then just becomes painful and depressing and you finish it feeling negative rather than, you know, kick it home and feel good about yourself.
Yeah, and I think when you're just in building your base, you know, going out and doing tempos around sort of 330-kilometre pace, like you're still going to get benefit from that. Mm. And you finish feeling strong and, you know, next week it'll, you know, feel easier and you'll then be running sort of mid-320s. So, I think a lot of runners just get into the habit of, regardless of what fitness level they're at, they're going to just try and do the session at, you know, what they're used to doing it at.
Good check that ego.
Yeah, and now's the period 19 weeks out from a marathon that it doesn't matter if you're not fit.
Yeah,
like, you know, it's probably good not to be fit.
Well, yeah, I was talking to Adam Didick about this last night. Like, we concentrate so much on, you know, leading up to a marathon and nutrition on marathon race day and what your main session's going to look like 4 or 5 weeks out, whereas no one really has a plan written for what you do afterwards.
Yeah,
and just checking. You know, there's quite a few people I follow on Strava and have had on the podcast that have ran Melbourne or Berlin, and there's no general, this is what you do after a marathon. Some people are kind of straight back into it, which I've kind of tried to get into it quick in the past, maybe like a week after, but some people are jumping straight back into it, like banging out races or sessions 7 days after. Whereas I think because I pulled out of Lake BY the last 2 years, I've known that I've stuffed it up in the past and I've failed. I've come back early, got to 7 out of 10 fitness really quick, and you kind of start of November, you're kind of hitting some pretty good form, but then it gets to like mid-December, January, and you're like, you're still feeling fatigued and just, you know, those issues with testosterone that I've spoken about in the past, and you just can't get from 7 out of 10 up to 9 out of 10, whereas this year I really let myself go a bit and recover and kind of do 2 weeks where I lost a lot of fitness, but now I feel ready to get back into it.
Yeah, I think this period up until Christmas is all about preparing the body to be able to then train for the marathon. And the one thing I really liked about the Road to Berlin thing was that we got to see how different people like prepare for a marathon like in depth over 10 weeks. And the thing that I've learned from it was that like I wouldn't say that Julian was in great shape 10 weeks out. Like, you know, it goes to show that as long as you're at a reasonable level of fitness and you can handle the volume that's required for marathon training, you can achieve a hell of a lot in 10 weeks. Which I think he showed. Like, you know, when you boys did that Albert Park 10K, I don't think either of you would just say that you're in awesome shape.
No.
And that would have been probably less than 10 weeks out, wouldn't it?
Well, that I'm not sure when it was, but that's when we kind of said, okay, we're ready to start doing the, you know, if we can run under 31 minutes now, we've done the training to be able to do the training.
Yeah. Yep. And so to show how much you can actually achieve in 10 weeks should give you confidence that you actually don't need to really push the envelope any earlier than 10 weeks out. You know, you just need to get your body ready to be able to handle those 100 mile to 180K weeks.
Mm. And I think because you're generally doing 2 hours on a Sunday as it is, like all you have to do is chuck 10 minutes on that and all of a sudden you're training for a marathon. You do 2:10, you do 2:15, you do 2:20, like you get to 2:30 within 3 or 4 weeks because you're already at 2 hours, which is, I think the general punters out there probably don't realise how quickly we can switch into marathon training because we're already doing the pre-marathon training.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, looking at my sort of four weekly structure here with my long run. So, I'm going to go sort of 30 this week, and then 32, then a 35. So, I'll have one longer run every month, which will be 2.5 hours. So, it'll get me about 35. Then I'll have a 32 with maybe a 5K surge at the end. So, that's just keeping that, you know. Little bit marathon specific, but I'll only do that once a month. So 32 with, and even then it'll be maybe like running 330s to 340s at the end of the long run. So it's nothing too intense.
Well, that's a glycogen depletion kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. And even then it's only 32K, so it's not super long. And then my recovery week, I'll just do the standard 2 hours, which will be, you know, under 30K. And so I'll pretty much follow that structure for, you know, the next 2 months.
Yeah. Good signs. What have you done? Like when you ran, which marathon did you run? You didn't do BY. You did
Beppu. Nagano.
What did you do after that marathon? Can you remember? Because it's something I'm asking everyone at the moment. I'm like, what have you guys done post-marathon? Just because it's as I said before, no one's going to write in training programs on how you get back at it.
Yeah, I had a really rough period after the marathon, actually. And this comes back to, so I blew up massively. I ran 70, I think I went through halfway in 71 and ended up running 226 high. And so my body was way worse than it was in Canberra where I, you know, negative splitted by about 3 minutes. So I took pretty much a week off and then I tried to run 5K the week after. And I got about 3 kilometres in and I felt like I was in the last 5 kilometres of the marathon again. So I then took nearly another week off and then I just I started back with some light sessions of, you know, 2 minutes on, 1 minute off. And then I was constantly injured after that. Like I had a few personal issues going on, which was just adding to stress. And I kept having these issues with my calves. My calves would start just like spasming on me. And every time that happened, I'd have to miss a week. So for me, so Nagano was April 2013, and I didn't run well again until late 2014, I think. I was just, yeah, always on and off with sort of these niggles. Yeah, it does. But I've been pretty good since. And that, and like I regret not getting, not running more marathons between, because I did, I ran my first one in 2013. I didn't do another one until 2016. And even that was Melbourne, which wasn't really proper effort. So there's a long time between marathons, which in hindsight, I wish I'd actually sort of just stuck at it. But yeah, it sort of destroyed me for a year and a half.
Yeah, but that's because even just talking to Julian about how he's going to skip his April marathon or the Feb, whatever it was for Tokyo, like we're in the other boat, aren't we? Like we need to just keep getting him in our legs and hopefully progressing. And he's just made that massive jump now that he can afford to, and he's got so many of them already in his legs, plus those trail marathons that he's got that strength there, whereas I'm kind of excited. Although I know how much it hurts, I know the only way I'm going to get better is doing more of them.
Yeah, yeah. I think what he's doing is a good idea, because, yeah, like I guess he exceeded his expectations a bit. And really, like the next goal for him, you know, because 220 is obviously a big barrier and, you know, I guess qualifying for Comm Games. But I guess 215 is really the next barrier, isn't it? You know, like in terms of time frames. So I guess he needs to get himself in shape for 215, which he probably needs to run under 30 minutes for 10K to do that.
Yeah, it's that pecking order kind of stuff that, you know, where he is, all those kind of 217, 218 kind of guys so close together, you just need to find 90 seconds and jump them all.
But also I think Julian's thinking, you know, a bit more long term as well. So rather than just rush straight into another one, put things in place so that he's a little bit faster over the shorter stuff, and I guess he'll be a little bit fresher going into his next marathon prep because he won't have done one for almost a year.
And you don't have that recovery in March, April that you have to get through again. You just keep it going through.
Yeah,
that's good, mate. Hey, did you see these UK, they picked their marathon team yesterday for the Comm Games?
Yeah, I know we're having a little chat about it last night.
Controversy.
It's just ridiculous. And, like, as I said, last night, I have no doubt that there's a lot more guys around our level that are focusing on the marathon now because AA dropped the standard to 2:19.
Let's go back a step. So the UK standard was 2:13. Johnny Mellor goes out and runs 2:12:57 at Berlin. Doesn't get selected. UK aren't sending any male marathoners to the Commonwealth Games in 2018.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Whereas, so many Aussie guys have probably deserved to represent Australia in the marathon, but AA used to have the standard at like 2:12 or something like that. And so all of these guys that were capable of probably running 2:13 would then go out to try and run sub 2:12 and end up, you know, blowing up a bit and running 2:15, 2:16 and not getting selected. But now that they've, you know, dropped it to 2:19, you know, I'm like, not that I'd ever make a team, but, you know, I'm probably focusing on it more now because running 2:19 is a hell of a lot more realistic than me running sub 28 or around 28 minutes for 10K. So I think it's great. And I was also having this conversation with Dan Wallace, the Kiwi guy that ran sub 2:20 in Berlin. So New Zealand have similar standards. And we worked out that if Australia had the same standards as New Zealand for Glasgow, then I don't think Michael Shelley would have been selected. And then he went on to win Comm Games. So it's just, yeah, like if you can run under 2:13 for the marathon, you're a chance of a medal at the Comm Games.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that was the reason they gave him, that he, because I'm just on his Twitter now and someone asked what was the reason and they said, he wrote back saying, I'm not considered a medal contender in the selectors' opinion, unfortunately. Like we're sending Liam. I think Liam ran 5 seconds quicker than him at Berlin, and like I'd consider Liam, if he has a good day, could run a 2:11 and pick up a medal.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be second-tier Kenyans there. They're not going to send Kipchoge and Kipsang and, Biewott or so, whoever, yeah.
But I think, I thought Michael Shelley winning gold in Glasgow would actually be more reason for other countries to go, you know what, let's send these guys that are, you know, sub 2:13 runners, because look what Michael was able to do.
Yeah, well, he ran 2:11:15 at Glasgow. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
it's a minute down the road, a minute and a half down the road. Yeah. Didn't get picked. But what gets me is, like, why have a standard? A guy runs it by a minute and 3 seconds, and then you still do not choose him.
Yeah.
So what is the point of even having that A standard?
Yeah, and like, it's all about promoting the sport as well. You know, like, by having a standard that's achievable, it keeps people in the sport.
Yeah.
You know, like, as I said before, like, 2:19 for Australian men, there's a lot of guys that can potentially do that, and it's going to keep people, it's going to keep them running. Whereas, you know, when it's 2:12, they're like, what's the point? You know, I'm never going to run 2:12.
Yeah, and it just kind of, I don't know, you look at this guy, and I'd never heard of him before he ran 2:12 at Berlin, and he's kind of like, you know, kind of that next, you know, he's not a Mo Farah, he's not an Andy Vernon, kind of the UK guys that you hear about a bit more, and kind of gives you hope that other guys can get selected and represent their country. And
yeah,
you're right, it's kind of like a 2:20 guy. I'm looking at that going, man, like, this guy is so unlucky.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's that whole politics behind it all, isn't it?
Yeah, but if every sporting body used, I guess, used the selection criteria as, we'll only send people to World Championships, Commonwealth Games, or Olympics if we think they can medal, there'd hardly be anyone at the Olympics.
Yeah, you'd have seven people in a race, like.
Like, because, you know, like, yeah, exactly. Like, for men's marathon, for example, like, realistically, all right, if you go, all right, we're only going to send people who we think can medal. All right, well, there's three Kenyans who
have run 2:03.
Pretty much guaranteed, and then Ethiopian. So, like, there's six there. Well, no other, and I guess Uganda, and yeah, no other country should send anyone, really. So.
But then the statement that, you know, only send people who are a possibility of medaling, when you don't actually know who the other countries have selected.
Yeah, yeah.
So all you can, like, all they should be using for that statement is the past winning times, and 2:12 would have nearly gotten it. Like, yeah, it does not make a much sense at all. And I understand, if you've got three guys who have, you know, if Mo Farah's going and someone else is going, and there's three guys who have run quicker than you, yeah, fair enough, bit unlucky you haven't made the team, but it's not like there's anyone on the start line for England at those Comm Games.
Yeah, and as I said before, if, like, based on what happened in Glasgow, you would say that Johnny Mello is actually a chance of a medal based on what happened in Glasgow.
Yeah.
So, you could argue that he is a medal chance.
Well, they sent, like, Steve Wayne stuff to the Comm Games at Glasgow. Like, he was a great story. A guy had come back after smoking and drinking, and I think he ran maybe 2:15, but the amount of people he would have inspired to run in England and all over the world, because he wasn't a naturally kind of talented guy, and he was, I think, 39 on the day, and, like, that's an amazing story, and it kind of goes through. Whereas, 2:15:16 he ran. Like, at the follow-ons effect, like, it's huge.
Yeah, I agree.
That's that rant for the day?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be
nice,
right.
Nice one.
Yeah, it doesn't inspire many people to go at it.
No, it doesn't.
It's going off on Twitter. It's got, like, he's got 301 retweets. He's going to go, well,
he'll appeal it, though, I take it.
Yeah, a few people are suggesting he should appeal. But, yeah, it's doesn't make, they're sending two female runners, but, yeah, no males on the team.
Yeah. Crazy.
Crazy, well, crazy, good. Crazy world.
I guess it's good for our boys.
Yeah, so you reckon that team's locked in? You heard any whispers about if Collis is going to run one?
No, I haven't heard, but I can't see anybody else. Well, there's nobody else that I know of that's running.
No one else other than Collis can go out and run a 2:13, can they?
I wouldn't have thought so.
Last name to have a crack?
Yeah, but be a pretty good team.
It's pretty strong. I was talking to Adam about it last night. Like, you know, you got Shelley Adams and possibly Hamer. 2:13 on debut too. Would he kind of maybe go in as a favourite with the Australians?
Maybe. Like, when I saw the result, I was stoked because I guess Chris is a Canberra boy now, and he's had a bit of bad luck over the last few years, because he was, a lot of people probably don't know, but he was selected for Glasgow in the 10K and couldn't go because he had to have surgery on his Achilles. And then ran quite well at the cross-country trial, I think earlier this year, and missed selection there. So if there's anybody that deserves an Aussie singlet, it's him. So, like 2:13 for a debut is a great run. And he's just a no fuss type runner. Just goes about his business. Doesn't have much of a profile at all. Like, I think he's even off Facebook now because we were Facebook, either that or he's cut me. But
he's cut ya.
We were Facebook friends, and when I saw the result, I went to sort of log on and send him a message of congratulations, but I couldn't find him. But then when I searched for him, I couldn't see him at all. So maybe he's lessened the noise and gone off it.
Fully lessened the noise when you go off Facebook. That's when you know you're keeping people quiet. You sat on him, dogged him at Zatopek or something 1 year, didn't you? And then kicked past him at the finish line. That's probably why he got rid of you.
So I was like, so I was the fittest I've ever been, and he was coming back from an injury. And the 30-minute train, I guess, sort of there was only two of us left after about a kilometre. And I said to him, "Do you want to do 800 metres each?" And we swapped off pretty much the whole race, up until two laps to go. So I did actually get him that night. There you go.
Got him. That was the same. Adam Didick was in the same race. We were talking about it last night when I recorded that podcast.
Oh, okay.
It was raining. Yeah. He was 40 seconds behind you.
But this is the sort of the guy Chris was. Like, so he obviously wasn't very fit at the time. And
because he's ran 28:18. Like, he's...
Since then. Yeah. And I was the one that's... Because I was in front of him at the time. I said, "Look, do you want to do 800 metres each?" And he's like, "Yep." And then he could sense that he was starting to struggle with, maybe a kilometre to go or something. And he goes, "Oh, I don't think I can do my next turn." And I said, "Oh, look, mate, if you take like the next lap, I'll do the last three or something like that." And like he stepped up and did it, like, just which so many guys would just be like, "I'm hurting. There's no way I'm going to do," because I'd never met him before. That was the first time I'd ever spoken to him. And for him to do that, I was pretty thankful. And that was the first time I went under 30 minutes that night. So,
I went to him.
I do, yep.
Could be a pretty quiet men's marathon team, though. All those three boys like keeping their profiles pretty low, Michael Shelley and Liam and Chris Hamer.
Yeah, they do.
Let their legs do the talking.
Yep, good way to be, I reckon.
Yeah. Too much trash gets spoken on Strava and podcasts and all that kind of stuff. This is why we're not running as fast as them.
Yeah, exactly.
Spending too much time banter.
Yeah, well, I've realised I'm never going to run fast, so I might as well just talk instead.
Yeah, try making it in the talking about running world instead.
Yeah,
That's good. And those girls are running quick. Like, it's a few more sub 2:30s the last couple of months.
Yeah, it's probably as well. Like, you look at their marathon standard now. Like, and it's there's a lot of girls that can potentially run that, which just encourages them to try. Like, when you compare the marathon times to like the 5 and the 10, if you're a pretty good female, like, you'd be mad not to attempt the marathon.
Mm. The thing with them is, though, they've got that easy stand. I think it's like 2:43 or something, but the girls are running, like, you got to run 12 minutes quicker than that to be considered.
Yeah, no, it's very strong now.
Whereas ours, you can kind of, run 2 minutes under and maybe be the fourth guy.
So I wonder, I wonder when we will actually have, more guys under sort of 2:15 and first sub 2:10 in a while.
Yeah, I spoke with Adam about this last night as well, and I pretty much said, why aren't they? Kind of, surely they're putting in the work and they're hopefully just as talented, but he kind of had a pretty good answer that he doesn't know the ins and out of their training and stuff, and he can't really comment to why, Michael or Liam aren't breaking 2:10, but... you'd like to expect that I think a lot more guys are going to run under 2:15 in the next 2 or 3 years, which is encouraging from Athletics Australia to make that standard 2:19, because those 2:19 guys have become 2:17, 2:18 guys on their way to trying to break 2:19. and then hopefully they can just make that next jump. And I think there's going to be a whole stack of guys, hopefully like yourself and myself, who can go from kind of 220s down to 219s, 218s, and kind of just keep, everyone just keeps going forward. But I'm not sure if that 212 to 210 gap's going to happen just quite yet.
Yeah.
Do you see that Norwegian guy ran like 59:45 for that half marathon over in Valencia?
No, I didn't see that.
One of Julian's mates. Ah, not Julian, one of Christian's mates.
Yeah, right.
Third fastest non-African of all time. And then Renata Canova's like got on the Let's Run forums and just like documented all his training. There's some insane stuff in there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's been living in Kenya and spent 12, I think he spent like 10 out of 12 months there, last 12 months. And yeah. Red blood cells are going through the roof.
So it looks like Christian's all confirmed for a tour down under.
Yeah, he's coming down.
Yeah, so originally he was going to come out to Australia before BWA, spend a couple of weeks and then head over with us. But it looks like now he's just going to go straight to Japan and then come over to Australia after, which probably makes more sense.
Yeah, party time afterwards.
So, yeah, try and get on the sub-220 sub-220 train.
Yeah, there might be, I think going into BWA, that'd be, because I think I was probably more that trying to hit that 219 or nothing kind of train at Berlin, so it'd be good to just go, just try for 220 and have a good few of us going through, and then we can kick it down at the end if we have to, rather than be under halfway or 35K in.
Yeah, I'll be treating that a bit like my first attempt at sub-30 on the track, where I think my last K was my quickest because I just wanted to make sure that I was on that pace. And even if I could have run 29:30 that night, I wouldn't have, like, I just, it wasn't part of the plan. It was just run under 30. And I think it'll be the same for BWA. Like, I'd be stoked. Even if I could run 2:19, I'd just be stoked to run 2:20 and probably won't bite off any more than that. So, Julian would call me soft, but I don't know. I prefer to just, first tick off that and then look at something faster down the track assuming I ever get under 220.
Yeah, and it's much easier said than done too, isn't it? Like, you got to get in pretty good nick and just need things to go right for you on race day.
Yeah, and I'm not getting any younger and I just have a feeling
age
that,
is just a number. Don't worry about age.
Yeah.
Like, no. your marathon training age is like 3, though.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
ignore that.
And my mental age is 1.
I might get in the classroom more. It might go up a few hits. Yeah, are you worried about that leading into, like, you know, especially when you said before how you're going to be focusing on, like, the bigger Wednesdays, and even though the intensity is not there, but when you're working full-time and you're trying to bang 2 hours out on a Wednesday and you still got to back up for work for another 2 days and do a session and... You kind of got any concerns or strategies in place to be able to deal with that?
I am a bit concerned by it because even this week, because I'm only part-time, like my timetable is quite light, but I had a full day yesterday. So like second day at the school when I was on every single lesson, and when Ben found that out, he's like, oh, do we need to restructure because, you know, you've got to go out and do that 90 minutes. And I said, look, we'll just see how we go. I'm a little bit concerned the start of next year, just with knowing, like, you know what it's like, those last 2 weeks of big training for a marathon, but then also the start of a school term when I'll be a new teacher at that school. It's I'm a little bit concerned that just stress levels and maybe not sleeping as well and might sort of just derail all the work I've done over the Christmas and New Year period. So I almost just have to prepare myself mentally for that 2 weeks being quite tough. And even if it means that I just drop the mileage a little bit or just be a little bit more conservative with the training just to make sure I don't sort of cook myself before the race.
Yeah, and you go from doing nothing all school, or not nothing, but you have very little human interactions compared to what you do in a classroom or at school. And then, you know, there's no, like, easing into it. It's not like, all right, we'll just start with, like, 2 hours a day, then 4 hours a day. Like, that first week, it just bangs you up massively. I know it takes me, like, 3 or 4 days just to get used to, like, just kids in your face and meeting new parents and you're meeting new staff. Yeah. And you've got a staff meeting after school here, and it's like... Yeah. Running, just, you almost have to put it on the back burner. And understand that's a part of the process, because it just drains you mentally. And there's no way you want to drive out of work and be like, okay, I'm going to go out and bang 10 by 1Ks.
And that's sort of what it's been like this week, really, is sort of for the last, because I hated my job, the one that I was doing before Berlin, and for this whole year, running has just been my main focus. And this week, it's almost been put on the back burner, and I can now sort of appreciate people that have like full-on jobs, have like a family with young kids where they're sort of constantly sleep deprived, but then also trying to train for a marathon. So I've got a feeling that that's how sort of life is, you know, in the next couple of years is going to be, which, you know, obviously does make it harder to train the way you want to train.
And that's where you need to stop being that perfectionist. Like, you know, you have a big day at work and you move a session or you ditch a session, but you're still sane. Like, you're not, where those little things kind of have to happen.
Yeah, and I guess Liam's podcast that you had with him, you know, the fact that he prioritised some sleep on a, you know, some afternoons and missed sessions, you know, as he said, it probably helped him in Berlin, even though at the time he probably thought it was doing him damage.
Yeah, because you can't, just burn it at both ends. Like, the sleep's, in a way, training.
So, but the school seemed pretty supportive of my running, which is good. I saw the principal yesterday, and I said, look, I just want to see you before I sign my contract for next year, just about this marathon in Japan. And I said, you know, I probably have to miss 4 days of work, and she seemed pretty okay with it. So, it's good that they're supportive of that, and so it means that maybe I can do another marathon later next year. We'll see.
Yeah, well, I think they've got to be, especially, like, you know, you don't have any kids, and I can't imagine you take many days carer's leave or sick leave. So given a guy who's trying to pursue his dreams and it's going to make him happier, giving him 4 days of even just unpaid leave so he can go and do that, it's going to mean you're better when you are there.
So I guess on the flip side with the whole teaching of being stressful, I guess one good thing about it, though, is a bit more balance again in my life. I guess in the lead up to Berlin, wasn't enjoying my job, so I guess all my eggs were in the one basket. And I think I touched on this in a podcast, so that, you know, when running's going well, it's awesome, but then when you're not running well or you're injured and you're not enjoying your job, then, you know, life sort of sucks. So assuming I'm enjoying this teaching job, it'll just give me, you know, a bit more balance.
Yeah, and even if you're not enjoying it to start off with, you're going to be presented with the challenge to get your head around it or make it work for you, so then you do enjoy it. That's good. You're over the jet lag and stuff now?
No, not really, no.
It hangs around, doesn't it?
Oh, like, I went to Europe in 2003 and I never remember it being this bad. So I have heard that it does get harder as you get older with jet lag, but like the first night I slept for 3 hours. Like, I don't have an issue falling asleep. I fall asleep for about 3 hours and then I'm awake at like 1 a.m. and I just cannot get back to sleep. So like I have some sleeping tablets which I hate using, but just with this week with a new job, I know that I need some sort of sleep, so I've been sort of having one of those when I wake up at 2 o'clock, just to, because then I start to stress that I'm not sleeping and I know that I'm not going to be able to function the next day. So hopefully I'm over the worst of it.
Yeah, and it just comes on late in the afternoon sometimes. I found, like, actually when I recorded that podcast with Liam, that was like at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night and I'd been up since 2, and I thought I was going to nod off halfway through it, so lucky it was entertaining and easy to talk to. But yeah, you just, it's at like, you kind of feel hungover, kind of, and it just hits you.
Yeah. Well, I sometimes feel drunk, and, like, I'm trying to, like, when I speak, I don't feel like I'm making any sense, which is probably just normal, but it's like...
You've made sense for the last hour.
And here I am, you know, standing up in front of a class, just, especially, like, you know, if I'm teaching last period, like, that's probably about where it, like, really hits me, so... hopefully, though, I just need to get through to the weekend and I think I'll be sweet for next week.
Only gets easier from here, mate. You'll be right.
Yeah, yep.
Righty-o. Cheers. Good. Thanks for your time again. I reckon we'll cap it there, eh? That's an hour, 10. Yep. Time goes fast when you're having fun.
Cool.
Right, our next time we'll hear from you, we'll be doing a new kind of project, which will be exciting. Start of November, I think. We're gonna pull the trigger on that. More news coming there.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Should be good. What about old wise man's doing his research and listening to different podcasts, and he's got us all.
Yeah, he's pumped.
He's got his gear organised for us. He's taking a lead. It's good.
Yeah, it is good.
He does nothing all day other than go on Strava, so he's goes on Strava and sells shoes from people from Echuca who drive down there.
I wonder how many people walk through his door every day.
Yeah, not sure. I think more now he's a 218 man. He's got a bit of a profile on the podcast.
Yeah, is that just to get his autograph or buy shoes?
Yeah, I don't know. No, he's still a nobody. He lives in Ballarat. 218 gets you nowhere there.
Yeah, it's true.
Jeez, if I ran 218 up here, I reckon I'd have like streets named after me and stuff.
yeah, exactly. The Madrid listener, Dom? Yeah, Dominic, he messaged me last night, sent me through his program and wanted me to look at it for him. So gave him a few pointers on that and introduced him to the Monofartlek. Like, he's going to give it a go.
Yeah, it's a good session. It's bang for your buck, 20 minutes, like it breaks
you. It's funny though, people that have never heard of it or have never done sort of minute on minute flow, they're just like, oh, that doesn't look that hard. And I'm like, I said, look, just give it a go. It creeps up on you and you'll find it pretty tough, but you do get a lot of benefit from it.
Well, even when I did that one the other week, that like 3, 1, 2, 3, I was looking to watch halfway in the minutes. I'm running like 2:55 pace and I'm like, all right, this is easy. Like maybe I'm not as unfit as I was. And then like it just hits you and you just, you can't run quicker than 3:20s and heart rate was through the roof. And it's just, they make it tough, those sessions.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah,
good. That's pretty cool. Like a guy from Madrid's emailing you his program, so you can listening to the Road to Berlin stuff, and you can give him some comments on it.
Yeah, it is pretty good, and like it's quite easy now to look at someone's program and just go, look, that's just not, you know, like he had things in there where he was having like 4 minutes recovery between mile reps, and I'm just like, dude, like if you're running halves and marathons, you don't need 4 minutes between a mile rep.
Get this, I went with these triathlon boys yesterday morning. They just met at a local cafe and they did, I actually thought the guy was joking because one of the guys is a massive joker, always kind of spinning gags and stuff, and they did a 4 minute effort and then a 6 minute jog, then a 4 minute effort.
Yeah.
And after, because it was just my easy day, so I was kind of running at kind of 3:50 pace off the back of them getting dropped. And then when they finished the first 4 minutes and hooked back and everyone kind of joined back up to jog, I said, oh, what have we got now? And he goes, 6 minutes. And I was like, you're joking, right? Like 6 minutes. Like, surely we're not doing 6 minutes recovery after 1 4-minute effort. Yeah. And I was like, no, that's it. And I'm like, is this still a part of the joke? Like, I literally could not work out if he was joking or that was legit. And then, one more 4 minute effort and that was it. But yeah, different people train different ways. But I think hopefully people listen to us on here and understand that we know what we're talking about.
Like, I reckon the only time you need more than 4 minutes recovery is if you're like a track runner and you're trying to get rid of some lactic.
Yeah, and if you're running like 58 second 400s or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, mate, cool. Thanks
for that. I better get to work.
You better get to work. Tough life.
See you, mate.
Bye. Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.